You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I'll give you anything to feel it coming. Do you wake up on your own? I wonder where you are and live with all your faults. Wake up where you are. I won't say anything at all. So why don't you smile?
So why don't we Skype? And that's what we're doing. So joining me from, I don't even know where James is, man. I think he's on the East Coast, but joining me is James Moran. James, what's going on?
Hey, Mac. Good to be here.
First of all, where are you?
I'm in South Jersey.
South Jersey.
A little suburb of Philadelphia.
Let's talk about, you know, I know some people from South Jersey. South Jersey is predominantly like farming country, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why they call us the Garden State down here.
Oh, is that where that came from?
Yeah, a lot of farmland out here. Most people know about Jersey because they land in Newark Airport.
Right, and we know about Bruce Springsteen, right?
That's right.
We know about the boardwalk, and we know it's like across the river from Manhattan, and they make fun of it all the time. Because of the New Jersey Devils, pretty good hockey team for years and years and years. Not so much lately, but that's all right. But South Jersey is not so much written about.
No, it's beautiful down here. I'm pretty happy down here. This is where I grew up in central New Jersey, and my wife is from down here, so this is where we settled. It's beautiful. I like space. I need space.
You need space. Oh, you're one of those guys. All right, let's talk about you. Born and raised where?
Born and raised in Ocean County, New Jersey. Stayed in the same house my whole life. Mom still lives there now. Mom's widowed, but went to high school in Toms River and went to college in Monmouth University in Monmouth, New Jersey.
I've heard of that. So when you go visit your mom, do you go in your bedroom and like hang out and like,
yeah, well, I got two little babies, so I don't get back home as much as I probably should, but
let me tell you, I envy people that can do that. You know, I wish I could. I wish, you know, my mother sold her house and so, not a part of my life anymore. But you know, when people go home and they go into their bedroom, right. I just think, I don't know why that, I think that's cool, but I do. But anyway, how does the Marine Corps get on your radar as a kid?
Well, when I was in high school, I went to a military high school. So that was my first exposure to. Well,
okay. So first of all, why were you that kid?
No, I was actually, I know there's a lot of parents send their kids there for disciplinary reasons, but no, not for me. The school I went to was in Pine Beach, New Jersey, which was the town over from where I grew up.
Right.
So growing up, you always saw the guys in their uniforms, and you know, my parents always said, we're going to send you there one day. So I kind of knew I was going to go there, and I looked forward to it. You know, I always liked the uniform, and I did well at the school. I enjoyed the structured life and the discipline, and I wanted to join the Marine Corps out of high school. My parents wouldn't let me, and you know, I got a good relationship with mom and dad, so I respected their wishes. I went off to college, and I graduated with a finance degree, went and became a stockbroker. I did so well as a stockbroker, I decided it's time to join the Marine Corps.
You know what? That's exactly what I did. I got my degree in economics. I went to work for Merrill Lynch in Los Angeles, and I fucking hated it. And I thought, look, I've got to do
it.
And you know what I did? I sat down with a sheet of yellow legal paper, and I said, I've got to figure out what I'm, you know, what should I be doing with my life? And I listed, what are the things that you love? And I wanted to be on a team. I wanted to travel a little bit. I wanted to have some of my work be outdoors and maybe some of it be physical. And I enjoyed teaching and learning. And so I whittled it down to, I was going to be either a coach and a teacher, or I was going to join the Marine Corps. And there was nobody else in my family that was Marines. Nobody else had ever been an officer. And but I'd lived in Southern California, and I'd seen Marines, and I'd read about them as a kid, and I knew their a little bit of the history, and I'd seen the movies, and that just they always impressed me. I was not interested in joining the American military; I wanted to be a Marine. And but my roots lie in the financial services business with those with I won't call them lying sacks of shit, okay? But back when I did it in the 80s, there was no internet, right? So people, I mean, you there was the stock quote pages, right? If you those of you who remember back that far, you'd open, you know, the business section and you'd see all the stock quotes from the NASDAQ, from the American Exchange, and then later from the over the counter exchange, right? So anyway, and you'd see commodities and you'd have a couple business articles. That's how people got information. And that was it. And so the brokerage houses, I worked for Merrill. I mean, they owned all the information from everything from books that had Standard & Poor's sheets about a company whose penny stock you were looking at investing in to whatever else you wanted to do. And I watched them, and people would ask me, like, "In now that you don't do that anymore, do you have any advice?" And I would say, do not do business with somebody unless you have a hook through their sternum. And they would say, "What do you mean?" And I'd say, you're a target for their commission, because it's back in the day of commission, right? Sure. And that's how you build a pool. That's how you go on vacation in Greece. And I said, if the only thing you are is that, that's not. But if you go to church with the dude, right, and he knows he's got to see you, if it's your brother-in-law's best friend, and he knows he's got to reconcile himself with that, that puts you in a different class of account. Right. And you may not get as treated as poorly as everybody else does. As a commission mark, as he's looking through your portfolio and he's looking at two things. What can I move to generate money for me? And it may be neutral. Hopefully it's positive for you. But my experience in all that was not a good one. I did not see what I thought was a lot of ethical behavior. And I thought, I can't do this. I can't do this for my whole life. So what was your experience like in the financial services industry?
Yeah. Well, look, I love the idea of investing. I love the idea of business. I love reading to this day. I'll read the Wall Street Journal every day. I mean, I just enjoy it. The idea of laying money out and getting more in return, you know, if you analyze things right, it's pretty good. Following guys like Warren Buffett, you know, these guys are, you can learn a lot and it's fun. But what I realized when I became a broker, I don't like managing other people's money. I like just managing my money. You know, I'm the only one that suffers if I screw up or I make a bad bet, and I'm fine with that. I'm a risk taker to begin with. So doing it with other people's money, I didn't like. And I also thought, you know, if I really miss it when I join the Marine Corps, I can always go back to
it.
There's guys that are 60 and they become brokers, but I would do it completely different now. I would just throw people in exchange traded funds, and I would focus on like tax laws and things like that. I think that's where you can really add value to,
you know what? You can put people in index funds, right?
Yeah.
And you can tailor that to their age. And I mean, it's a pretty math driven model and about how to accumulate wealth and, you know, but hopefully you have somebody that will teach you about it and that will add value by the different recommendations they make relative to taxes and other things they can do. And so that's it done well. And most of the major brokerage houses have all gone to you get paid for assets under management. So you bring more assets and more money to the firm, right, that they manage. And that's how – so there's no incentive for you to churn an account, which is what it used to be called. When we lived in a commission-based world, there's more incentive for you to do it well and keep that account in the house and all of that. But you know what? I thought the same thing. You know, if I was going to do the Marine Corps, I had to do it now because, you know, there was a window that closes for all of us. Right. And so even my thought about being a coach and a teacher, the way I racked and stacked that was – if I don't like this, you know, Marine Corps, I'll go in and I'll serve my time and I'll get out and I'll go become a coach and a teacher. But there was a window. And so our parallel tracks in the universe.
Yeah. Yeah. I figured let me just do 4 years. And a lot of the brokers who were prior Marines, they did very well. They flourished. I noticed that people really took to Marines in the workplace. They typically had good work ethic. They had good stories that they could tell, you know, which enabled them to build rapport with prospects.
And, good. Come on. Nobody tells stories like we do. Right? Well, we have most of us, and especially if you've been around the world once or twice. I mean, you know, there I was in Patio Beach one morning at 3:30. I've got a boa constrictor wrapped around my shoulders, and that's the story behind that picture. It doesn't look like you were sober. Well, there's a good reason for that, because I wasn't. Right. Oh, well. So you now, why the – okay, let me go – I wanted to kind of double back. I didn't want to interrupt you when you were talking about going to military school. But why did your parents think that was a good thing? Was your dad a veteran?
My dad wasn't a veteran. No, they didn't want me to go after high school. They wanted me to get a degree. So they wanted me to go to college. I didn't tell them I joined. Once I was a broker and I was living on my own, I just called the recruiter up. I said, you know, send me the paperwork. I'm ready to go. And he did. I filled everything out, sent it back to him, and, you know, started the process. And that was back in the year 2000. So, yeah, I went off to OCS in January 2001.
All right. So you go to OCS and then you get there. And do you know what you want to be in the Marine Corps, or how do you figure that out?
I was looking at probably intel when I initially started, but then you know, the events of September 11th happened while I was at the basic school, and that kind of made the decision pretty easy. And I went infantry. I mean, it was no question what I wanted to do after that.
All right, so you become an infantry officer, and then where do you go? Where do you head as a lieutenant? You're one of those guys who, right, was headed in that trajectory before September 11th, and then it happens, and then in an instant, like everybody, you know, whether you talk about recruits that were at recruit training in San Diego, who all of a sudden said, yeah, well, what we noticed was there was no planes flying. That's how we knew something was different. And then somebody said, hey, man, how come the planes aren't flying? Like, well, maybe it's just, no, they never go this long. Well, now it's been hours. Like, why is the San Diego airport shut down? What's going on, right? And so then they get all taken into a theater and told, hey, we're probably going to go to war, and you guys are going to be a huge part of it. And,
yeah.
I mean, right, in the flash of a morning, everybody's life changes.
Yeah, yeah. I remember we were in a land navigation class at TBS, and the RCO came in, just turned the lights on and said, hey, you know, just letting everybody know the Twin Towers just collapsed. And we were like, holy cow.
Yeah, you was a New Jersey guy, right?
Yeah. My sister, I believe she was working in Manhattan at the time, Midtown at the time, but she had gotten out of there. But yeah, she knew quite a few people that were there, and yeah, it's just crazy, as everybody knows. Yeah, it was just, that was a crazy, crazy day.
So what happens? Well, obviously, nothing happens, right? You go through the basic school, and then where do you go after that?
We go to 3rd Battalion, 6th Marines, so headed down to Camp Lejeune.
Which company?
Started out in Kilo Company, and we were part of the anti-terrorism battalion that the Marine Corps stood up initially after September 11th. Didn't really do much exciting stuff other than go to Guantanamo Bay for a few months and guard the base, and headed off to East Africa, to Djibouti, Africa, do similar force protection stuff out there. And then in 2004, we was in India Company and went over to Afghanistan.
My oldest is in 3-6 right now.
What company?
Lima.
Okay.
He's a company commander, Lima Company 3-6. So Johnny boy, yeah. Just took over a few weeks ago. So
Marine Corps
3-6. So how long you stay in the Marine Corps?
Well, when I came back, I then took a recruiting tour. I stuck around for a B billet.
Right.
So I went up to Pittsburgh to take over as OPSO station, Pittsburgh.
Notoriously difficult recruiting station.
Notoriously, which I couldn't figure out why. And it took us about a year to right the ship. And we were making mission every month. And it was tough recruiting time because that was 2005 and 6 where, you know, the news, there were Marines getting hit just about every single day in Iraq.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was making this news every single day. And but we were doing it. It's good patriotic people out in Western Pennsylvania. I think some of that had to do with just attitudes out in that area. But once we fixed all that, we were crushing it out there.
The and so you get out after that?
That was it. Yep. Then I moved back home to that bedroom that you were talking about, that I grew up in. I got out in I guess that was late 2007 and moved back home and started a business.
All right. So what kind of business?
Started an ATM company. So I always joke around and say I give people cash for a living. So those ATM machines that you see in the malls and hotels and little bodegas and tourist areas, rest stops, started with one of those and grew it from there.
The so what do? You provide them? You service them? What?
Yeah, everything. We do.
Yes, yes.
Well, yep, we locate them. We'll install them, maintain them, fill them, fix them, relocate them. We do everything.
Wow. Find, fix, locate, service, maintain. Your one-stop shop for ATMs?
Yeah.
What's the name of the company?
So I have two companies. So the one company I own is called Semper Fi ATMs.
Nice.
Yeah, that's my New Jersey-based company. So I own all of that. And then I've started a national company with a fellow Marine that I'm 50-50 with called Strong Point Capital. And with that company, we went after national accounts. So hotel groups, highway rest stops, government contracts. My business partner's was blown up in Iraq in 2004. So he's a disabled veteran. Made a full recovery, you know, went on and got his MBA, real sharp guy. So we get that nice service disabled veteran owned business designation
for
businesses that want to diversify their supply chain without sacrificing quality. We're one of the companies that can do it for them.
All right. So let's talk about the work you do with veterans. First of all, tell everybody what you do, James, and then we'll talk about, you know, the mechanics of it. So give everybody the broad brush overview.
Okay. So in 2011, we started what's called the BARX project. And what the BARX project does is we'll take Marines, post 9/11 Marines and Navy corpsmen, and we'll reunite them with their battle buddies, guys that they fought with overseas in Montana, in order to reestablish that special bond that gets forged in battle and help them succeed in the next phase of their life in the civilian world. And the method that we do is we'll bring them out, all expense paid. We'll bring them out to Montana, bring them out to a ranch out there. And they'll do a couple days worth of fly fishing out on the rivers, the Yellowstone River, Stillwater Rivers, whatever the guides put together. So we'll get them out there. And, you know, we teach a couple classes, mostly in finance. And we just let them, a lot of times these guys haven't seen each other since they got out. And we just allows them some healing and in the great American West.
All right. Now, how do I get on your radar? How does you reaching out to me happen?
So, I get a lot of windshield time with my business. So podcasts and audio books are a great way for me to pass time. And I was just poking through on the podcast. I said, I wonder if there's any kind of Marine podcast out there. So when I search in my little engine there, you popped right up, started listening to a couple things. I recognized Colonel Kenny because he was my CO when he was a major at IOC. And I'm like, yeah, it's a pretty good podcast that you guys have. And then you, when you talked about post-traumatic winning, that really got my attention because we've had a tremendous amount of success with the guys that we get our hands on for this project. And I've always thought about how do you sustain that high at the end of a trip, because these guys, their whole attitudes are completely changed by the end of the trip that we have, you know, and how do you keep them from falling back into maybe some of their bad habits that they have So it's something that we're always constantly thinking about. How do we improve that? You know, do we do a second trip and bring the same group out? Or is there different courses that we can put together for them and run them through? So when you were talking about post-traumatic winning, it reminded me of when General Mattis talked about post-traumatic growth. He gave a couple talks where he says, you know, you don't have to have post-traumatic stress disorder. You can have something called post-traumatic growth, and that the events and trauma that you may have experienced overseas can actually make you a better person. It can make you a more compassionate person. It can make you a kinder person, a more understanding person, because you've seen a side of the world and human behavior that not many people get to see. And I'm like, man, he's really on to something. I really agree with that. And then it sounds like post-traumatic winning even takes it a little bit further. So that's when I reached out to you.
Talk to me about, you know, what's your plan? When you heard about post-traumatic winning, how does it fit into what the BARx project is all about?
All right. Well, when we get them out there, we kind of just let them decompress and just catch up with each other. I mean, you'll see when you put guys back together who haven't seen each other since they've been to war, they start connected right there at baggage claim at the Billings Airport. And because there's that trust, that bond, it's right there. So we give them a couple days, you know, and sit out on the river, enjoy themselves. And then we do bring them in, and we do a couple guided discussions about what their life has been like since leaving the Marine Corps. And we run them through a couple finance classes. And I think whatever your course is that you have there, that post-traumatic winning, it would really benefit a lot of these guys, because the way we decompress these guys after they come out of war, we send them to TAPS for, I don't know, what was it, a week, a
yes.
couple days.
Yes.
We help them put their resume together, but they've already got one foot out the door. Nobody's really paying attention to anything. And we tell them, hey, if you have any issues, just go see your local VA and they'll take care of you. You know, and you're expected to go in there by yourself. And nobody really teaches them, okay, how do you post-traumatically grow? How do you win post-traumatic? How do you process some of the things that may have happened to you while you were overseas? That's something we don't do a good job of in the Marine Corps.
So this fits that piece. This fits that. And because I would tell you, my impression is that what we do is we teach people how to endure, right? We'll medicate you and, you know, we'll let you talk about it. And we'll teach you how to endure it. But, you know, in terms of growing from the experience, in terms of, you know, having the experience be transformational in your life, it's not a place that we go, right? It's not a place that we go. And so to me, that's what's so different and unique. And to me, and I just, this thought just popped into my head, so excuse the tangent, but I didn't set out to create post-traumatic winning. I set out to just talk about it in the hope that talking about it would help. And what happened slowly but surely was a series of discoveries about what could happen, what was possible, you know, as you went down this road. And to me, that's been part of the cool part of this is it's not like I started out to create a problem to sell to veterans or anything. That's not what I ever did. But as a leader, when I discovered these things, I thought, you know, I've got to share it. You know, I got to share these. If I could share these with people, I could save people from going down some of the roads that we go down and then the destructive behavior that happens. And so to me, what's exciting about your, what was exciting about your phone call is that I'd already had an experience with somebody that approached me that ran a weekend program, but it was funded by the VA, and the VA doesn't allow your finance programs, right? It wouldn't allow post-traumatic winning to be a part of it. So when you called, as James can attest, when he called me, right, the explosion that he got through the phone, dude, let me tell you what's going to happen, right? So James, talk about that, because I was like, I'd never met James before. And then we have this exchange via email, and then we spoke, and I was like, I was fired up because I know the power of this. So talk about that from your end. So you make this phone call, we exchange emails, and we have a phone call. What was that like? Because your instinct is right on.
Yeah. Well, there's synergy between what I'm doing and what we're doing at the BarX project and what you can provide with a course like this, because there is a crisis going on in the post 9/11 veteran community. I mean, suicide rates are off the charts, and they don't appear to be getting better. I was looking at the 2021 budget for the VA. They're allocating $10.2 billion for mental health at the VA. $10.2 billion, and the needle's barely moving on the suicide with veterans. I mean, it's a major, major problem. And I think a lot of it has to do with not decompressing them after war, and not teaching them, you know, not teaching them how to win, how to do what your course is made up of. So I think if you do bring them back together, and I'll expand on that in a second. If you do bring them back together and you put them through a course like what you're talking about, and you teach them how to process things and teach them what life is going to look like going forward by somebody with a ton of experience who has a military mindset, who comes from the military, I think it can make an enormous, enormous amount, enormous impact. And I think you got to do it in units. You got to keep these guys together, because in the Marine Corps, what we do is we take these guys when we go out and recruit. The Marine Corps does a wonderful job of recruiting guys from every corner of this country, all over this country, from little holes in the wall. We'll take guys and women, and we put them down in a boot camp in Parris Island or San Diego, and we pound it in their head. Hey, don't ever say the word I anymore. It's we, you know, the greater good of the unit is more important than your personal feelings. And then we take them out of boot camp and we send them to a unit and we train them as a unit to become a cohesive fighting force. And we take that same unit, we deploy it in a combat zone, and we fight it as a unit, and it works. It's effective. It's a real effective way to fight a war, to take a highly trained, cohesive unit, put it in a battlefield, and then bring it home together. And then when enlistments are up after they're coming home, we just send them off into their small towns again. And we say, hey, if you have a problem, just go as an individual now to your local VA where nobody knows who the heck you are. And there'll be a doctor there that you can go talk to, and he'll give you a bunch of drugs that you can get drugged up with. That is not a plan that's going to succeed. Why aren't we decompressing these guys as a unit, like a squad size element? Bring them all out and make it fun. Bring them into the American West. Bring them out in a peaceful environment. There was some philosopher that said nature is the greatest physician out there. It's true. When you go out into the American West and you see rivers and pristine land that hasn't been touched in thousands of years, there's something very therapeutic and relaxing about it. And then you do it with guys that you know and you trust, and then you can put them through a class and a course like what you provide. Personally, I see that as being the answer.
Well, let me just say, as you and I have talked, and I'll let people hear part of our discussion, but what I know the power of the truth. And then not looking at them and saying, yeah, you're damaged, but, you know, looking at them and saying, hey, we don't want less from you, man. We want more from you. And they're like, what? So look, I'm going to teach this, and it's good that, and you're going to understand yourself better, but that isn't good enough. I want you to touch somebody else's life. Yeah. And how that resonates with us because of our, you know, the service was important to us. It will be important to us throughout our whole life, because that's the way our DNA runs, is to me pretty cool. And talk about resonating, right? Talk about resonating. And that's the coolest part of post-traumatic winning, is that, you know, we can fix us. And then in addition to fixing us, we can go ahead and we can we can help first responders because they're, they're tangential to our organization, right? We can help them. And then we can get this into every college and high school around the country. We can do that as veterans, right? Because all this comes out of our culture. And to look at their face, and the cool part is that because it's all based in the truths that they know, And one of them, one of the ones that affects them the deepest is when you look at them and say, you're never going to get over this shit.
Yeah.
And people tend not to tell them shit like that, right? And they'll come up to me and they'll say, why hasn't anybody ever told me that? And I say, I don't know, because it's fact one, right? I mean, look at the History Channel, right? You want to hear guys talk about Kaesong over 50 years ago? You want to hear guys talk about Iwo Jima 75 years ago? And you want to see them describe it in slow motion, high definition, right, with tears coming down their face? Okay, so let me tell you, if there's a lesson to be taken for that, is that you're not going to get over it ever. And that's okay. It's just the way it is. And we're going to teach you this stuff so that you can not only live a good life, you can live a great life. And that's, I mean, man, and when you see the look on their face, right, it makes you want to headbutt them out of affection.
Yeah. Man, I love it. I love it. And I tell them, you know, when a lot of these guys don't fit in anymore. You know what I mean? We don't fit in, you know, to the society that's out there today, this materialistic secular society that's out there today. And I tell them that's probably a good thing that you don't fit in. That's because you know better. You know what I mean? It's okay to not fit in with this society because you're a leader, because you're different. You are different. And that's a good thing.
And the other thing that excites me is that I see James's program as the prototype going forward. That I don't think getting veterans together and taking them fishing, and maybe, I don't know, some guys shoot, some people kayak, people do all kinds of stuff. I don't think that's good enough. I don't think that's enough. But you can see why people do it, right? It is cool to be around veterans, and it's a great feeling. But what you really want to do is you want to transform their life. But until now, I don't know of another tool that I've been told of other than faith-based tools, where I've heard guys, you know, go to faith-based stuff and get told that really helped me. Well, you know, whether we like it or not everybody, you know, is a person of faith anymore. And sometimes even people that are people of faith, this stuff rocks them in a way that their faith doesn't resonate with them. It helps them, but it doesn't take them where they want to go. And so to me, the transformative nature of post-traumatic winning is something that is so profoundly moving to me that I can't. That's why I jumped to the phone and grabbed James by the throat and said, yo, bro, I hope you're ready mentally for what happens with this. Because I told James, I said, you're going to be the prototype in the country for how to do this. And you're going to wind up having bigger classes. You're going to wind up having, you're going to do this more often. And I said, are you ready to do this full time? And he said, well, I'm not sure about that. I've got other businesses that I run, but it would certainly be a nice problem. But that's where I see this going, James. I mean, honestly, and there's not one ounce of nonsense or bullshit in any of that. There's such a need for it. And everywhere I go, the same thing happens. And I can't tell you how fired up I am that we're going to hopefully partner and create a new standard for the way we treat ourselves and that the gift we give everybody else, so that we can translate our trauma and our pain into something good, and we can take that goodness and we can give it to other people, which is transformative for us and for them. And so I describe it as good on top of good on top of good on top of good. And it's pretty cool that we're going to be hopefully doing this.
Yeah, well, everybody needs to hear it. And I think if you take a Marine, right, who's suicidal, right, let's say he's at the end of his rope. Okay, you have a guy that's completely debilitated. He's depressed. He can't get out of bed. He's completely withdrawn. he's isolated himself. He doesn't talk to his family anymore. He doesn't talk to any of his friends back home anymore. Okay. How do you fix that kid? How do you help that guy? Because he's not picking up the phone and he's not going to call a mental health professional. I believe the only way you can help that guy is you got to get the guys that serve with him overseas to track him down and get their hands on him and say, hey, let's go. It's time when we're going to do this together. And what we do here at the Bar X Project is we empower those battle buddies to say, hey, let's go. We're coming out to get yourself on a plane. We're going to go out to Montana. I'm going to be there. Sergeant so-and-so is going to be there. Lance Corporal so-and-so is going to be there. Let's go. And they'll come. They will come because they trust those guys and they will listen to those guys. And I think you put them in that scenario, you combine it with a little post-traumatic winning, I think you're going to give that Marine the greatest shot to make a breakthrough with.
Well, I mean, and task one will be what? Reach out to the other guys in your squad.
Yeah.
Start there. Start with family and friends at home. But the first professional piece is reconnect, create a chat group with your squad, if you don't already have one, and start changing their lives and watch what happens. And watch what happens to your life. And again, it's I mean, how cool is that? And you know, in my mind's eye, I can already see the smiles on their face, right? Man, I can't wait to tell so and so who we wanted to come with us but said no. Right? And I can't wait to spend some time with him or her, and I can't wait to change their life. And so I just to me, and then when and that's just a taste of it. And then look out, right? And then look out. Watch what happens after they get a taste, because what happens is they go from sheep, right? Groping in the darkness, trying to deal with this thing that they have that other people don't understand, and then now they're being somebody else's shepherd. They don't have it solved completely. They know they're going to struggle, and post-traumatic winning says that. Don't overreact to the days that you struggle. Don't think that when you're not struggling and you haven't struggled in a bit that it's gone away, because it hasn't, right? It just means the surf is 2 to 3 feet and it's easy. So if you know those things, then you can get through the day. And if you're willing to talk about it, and if you stop faking it, there's all these concrete pieces that make sense to us. And then you do it and your life changes. And so, but you can see the smile knowing that we're going to affect our guys, our girls, and then how that's going to transform their life forever, because you can do it for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Well, you're on to something. You're on to something big time. Just to give you a... Knowing I was going to come here and we were going to have this talk, I went through, I got a whole entire file cabinet filled with letters that guys have sent me who we ran through just our project. And this is even before we started throwing post-traumatic winning into it. And this is the stuff that, you know, if this was just like a fishing trip and that was it, you know, and the guys went home and I asked, hey, did you get any benefit? And they said, you know, it was a good trip. Thanks. I don't see how it can help veterans. I would move on. I'd do something else. You know what I mean? I'm an animal lover. There's a great shelter down here. I'd volunteer my time.
All right, hold on. You keep moving something. Every time you move something, it like hammers your microphone.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, if I got, hey, this was a great trip, but I don't see how it could help veterans, I would just do something else. You know what I mean? I would volunteer at the animal shelter by my house, or there's a lot of good programs that my church runs there where, you know, for opioid addiction and drug addiction. I'd go over there, but this is just some of the notes that some of these guys have sent me. I'll just give you an example right here. Hey, I hope things are well with you. You know, it was just a few months after that trip, I found my purpose in life. And now, thanks to having purpose, I was able to become the man I needed to be to repair my relationship with my kid's mom. We just got married this weekend after 14 years and 2 kids, and life has been beautiful for me. Now, this was a guy we brought out. This is a Marine who lost his arm, and we brought him out about 3 or 4 years ago. And he just sent me that note a couple months back. But we brought him out with his guys that he was there with when he got injured. So when you bring them out, he doesn't have to explain why he has no arm. You know, the guys that were there were the ones that put the tourniquet on when it happened.
There is no. And as Marines, we shy away from words like intimacy, but the intimacy that you share when you've done that for each other, when you've been there on the terrible days that you've experienced, and you've been there since that, there's an intimacy, an unspoken intimacy there that's as cool as it gets in life. Of friends that you've shared danger with, that you've shared very difficult times. And again, doing this kind of stuff in that context, which is the genius of yours, James. And let me ask you this, the whole battle buddy thing, where did that come from? Where did that model come from? Because most organizations don't do it like that.
Yeah. Well, it was a work in progress, kind of like what you were saying, how you kind of stumbled upon your post-traumatic winning. We kind of stumbled upon this too. And when we initially did it, so how the first trip was started in 2011 was the people I buy my ATMs from, they're based in Montana. So as you're growing your business, you become pretty friendly with the sales guys just because you're always on the phone with them. They're personable guys and you start to get a nice relationship going with them. So the one sales guy, his name was Rob Lowe, spelt and sounds just like the actor. But he said, "Hey, James," because he knew I was in the Marine Corps. He said, "Hey, my folks got a ranch up on the Yellowstone River. If you want to ever bring out some injured guys, just let me know. We'd be happy to host them. I could bring my buddies down with boats and we can take them out on the river and fish with them." I said, "Well, Rob, if you're serious, I can probably make one phone call and get 20 guys to sign up for that. Just let me know if you are really serious." And he said, "Well, let's keep it small. You know, let's start with maybe four guys plus you and another guy. We'll have six total. I can bring three boats down and we can maintain it. Just take care of their airfare, their food and everything, and we'll be good." So I called down to the Wounded Warrior Regiment in Quantico and I just said, "You know, can you get me four bodies and we'll put them out in Montana, all expense paid." And it just took them forever to get me names. I mean, we were literally buying walk-up airfare. I mean, I had names like 2 days or a day prior to departure, which is not what our intention was. And I realized, you know, we know so many guys from so many deployments that are injured, that are hurt. I mean, we could probably reach 1,000 guys just on our own. Why do we need to go through, you know, the Wounded Warrior Regiment? So we just reached out to guys that we knew for that next year. And we realized we were onto something when they all got together initially at the airport and they just immediately, it was like a magnet. They just flocked right to each other. And it was like there was no time in between, even though there's probably 8 years apart where they hadn't seen each other. It was like they just saw each other yesterday. And I was like, man, this is going to be a much different weekend than the time last time. And it was. It was completely different. You realize those guys have that synergy because they went to war together. So we, from that point forward, we knew we just need to enable that synergy to take place by putting these guys back together. And that's how we've run the trips going forward ever since.
That's awesome. All right, let's talk about how do you select people? How do people listen and want to be part of your program? Can they nominate people? Can they call you and say, "Hey, I'd really like to be part of this"?
Yeah, you can. You can email me. My email's up on the website at barxproject.org. That's B-A-R, the letter X, project.org, all one word. So, you can nominate. We've just been reaching out to guys, you know, just through our network right now, and that's how we're pulling them. But this has been growing. We used to do just one trip a year. You know, last year we did five, and this year we have another five planned, and it's only growing. There's only more money that's been coming in as other foundations see the results that we're getting with some of these guys. They're starting to get behind us, and they're starting to give us some decent amount of money where we can just continue to add these trips. So, yeah, you can reach out to me on the email, and we'll get you in the pipeline, and that's the way that's kind of the way we've done it.
So if I reach out to you and you say, yeah, this, it'll work. And then you pay for the airfare for me and my friends to go hang out for a weekend and have a good time together.
Yeah. Right. Yep. We pay for everything. We tell them, just bring your ID. You can leave your cash. You can leave your credit cards at home. It's all expense paid. We cover everything. The flights, the fishing licenses, the food, the overnight stay, fly rods. At the end of the trip, you get to keep your fly rod and you can go home with it as a little token of our, for you to remember your trip with. But yeah, it's all expense paid.
Okay. Look, I don't need to get my secret decoder ring out, to figure out that's a pretty good deal, right? To hang out with your battle buddies. Are you kidding me? I mean, that's a joke, right? I mean, the laughter alone, right? The laughter alone, let alone what it does for your soul and your spirit, is well worth it. And again, so all I got to do is go to Bar X Project and do a search on that, and then you'll have, there's a way for them to contact us is on the website.
Yep. And my email is james@barxproject.com. So that'll come directly to me. You can email me directly and I'll respond.
How has this changed your life? I mean, I let me just say, I have people, you know, that come to post-traumatic winning and they look at me and they're like, holy shit, man. People that have gone through what you've gone through in your life aren't supposed to be happy. And if you could do it, I can do it. How has this changed your life?
Well, it makes me more appreciative. I mean, to whom much is given, much is expected is something I think about and I try to live by. I mean, I've been very fortunate. I mean, I've had some crazy things happen overseas, but I've got all my limbs, and I mean, I've been very, very blessed and very, very fortunate. And then to build a business that's able to provide for my family, I mean, I'm very blessed. So with that, I think comes responsibility to give back. And I think you got to give back along the way. I think that's part of the deal of becoming successful. You can't just hoard everything and then, you know, when you're 80 years old, start divvying it up. I think part of your success, you should be helping folks along the way. So I get great enjoyment out of seeing the transformation that these guys that takes place on these trips with these guys. It's also brought out so many good people that have come out and helped us grow this thing even further. I mean, I'll just give you an example. Like, we go out to Big Timber. We'll take them out the final night. We'll go out for a nice steak dinner at one of the local restaurants in Big Timber, Montana. Big Timber is just a small one street light town.
One of my good buddies lives there. We were in Afghanistan. He runs a ranch out there. And his name's Rob Schwartz. He's our regimental XO in Afghanistan for the 1st Marine Regiment in 2010-11. So he lives there. And I told him about your program. And he does
and
a little
got a ranch out there?
Yeah, he does a little bit of, I can put you in touch if you want, so let me know.
Yeah. Well, we were at the Grand in Big Timber. So I tell the waitress, look, put everything on one check, give me the check at the end. We finish up the meal, we let the Marines eat whatever they want. I asked the waitress, hey, you know, can I get the check? And she's like, there is no check. I said, what do you mean? She said, there's somebody in the restaurant that heard who you guys were, and they wanted to pick the check up for you. I said, get the heck out of here. I said, well, who was it? So I can go over and say thank you.
That's not a cheap check either.
It was at least $1,000, yeah. And she said, they want to do it anonymously. They said, just tell everybody thank you for your service, and they're very appreciative. You know, and stuff like that, you know, it just makes you so much – there's so many good people and good quality people in America still. I mean, you know, you turn on the news and, you know, everybody's at each other's throats. And I think people like that are there's more of those folks out there than you hear about, but they do exist. And, you know, seeing that has been really rewarding for me as well. Just, you know,
it restores your faith. I tell people, relative to the news. That's not our country, right? I've lived in this country. I fought for this country, right? I've been elected to public office in this country. The people of this country are great people, right? What you see on the news is designed for you to click on and watch, which drives advertising rates, which drives revenue, which drives corporate profits. That's how that works. That is a for-profit business. That is not a reflection of what's gone on in this country today. So remember that, and don't be afraid to shut that shit off. If you want to know what the United States is made out of, watch when something wrong, something goes wrong, like what's happened in Nashville, like what happened in Houston, and watch the way people from all over this country go down there, and people like Team Rubicon, right, started by a former Marine, you know, go down there, and they do just incredible stuff. That's the United States. And this nonsense and the shit in Washington, D.C., that is not a great reflection of who we are as a nation and what we are as a people. And I've had a similar experience. I came home from, I can't remember, it must have been Iraq the second time, and took my family out to brunch on a Sunday, and I hadn't been home for very long. And there was seven of us for brunch, and it wasn't cheap. And same experience. There isn't, could I have the check? Yeah, there is no check. Could you tell me who did it? No, they asked me not to say. And it's like, it's just, you know, you go through all that stuff and, you know, people say, well, the American people don't care. Well, the American people do care, right? We don't encounter them very often like that because we're on bases and stuff like that. But the American people no shit care. And so experiences like that, I think, do a whole lot to fortify us, right, as human beings. That, yeah, it's out there. We just don't see it, you know, often enough because they do it on the down low.
Yeah, and the Marines feel that. The Marines feel that because they know it's coming out of the goodness of someone's heart. It's not coming from, you know, the VA or a government-funded organization. It's coming from pure generosity and pure appreciation for what they did.
All right, now, what haven't I been smart enough to ask you about what you do, how you do it, when you do it, that you want to make sure that you let people know?
Well, I think it's important that people know that, you know, this is, we're running this with all volunteers. You know, I'm not paid. I don't pay any of my guys. Everybody puts these trips together, and it takes a lot of time to coordinate, buy flights, line everything up, line up the guides, line up the food, shuffle people's schedules around. You know, it takes a lot of work. So to put, and it's all done, all volunteer. Our website is done by a guy who volunteers his time. His father was a Marine. He rebuilt our entire website pro bono.
Yeah, as his form of service, right? As a tribute to his father, right? I mean, you hear people that want to do these things, and it's a lot of them have never served, and this is the way they want to serve. And yeah. It's touching and amazing.
Yeah, his name is Chris Hare. He runs the Storied Future, it's called. But yeah, he's puts in countless hours to getting us a much more better presence online. And I hope anybody listening would go to our website, take a look at what we've got up there, because everything's current. We've got a lot of stories that you can read. If you don't like reading, we got a couple great videos that tell the stories of the Marines that we brought out on previous trips. And I think what you'll like about the stories that we have posted is that you'll hear about war from the individual servicemen's perspective. You know, that book, The Greatest Generation by Tom Brokaw, that Yes. book single-handedly defined that entire World War II generation. And if you read it, it's one of my favorite books because it tells the war from the perspective of the individual serviceman. It's just one chapter is on Joe Foss. One chapter is on this guy. The videos that we post tell the story of those guys that we reunited out there, how they were injured, what they saw, what their experience has been like in Montana, what it's like to see each other again for the first time in a long time. So I think you guys will like it. And they're only 5-7 minute videos, easy to watch, easy to follow, and they're professionally put together by videographers who do it all pro bono for us. I think that's important for everybody to know, because you hear a lot of, there's a lot of veteran organizations out there that are paying people tons of money, and the money's not going to what the donors want the money to go to. We try to change that with what we're doing.
His name is James Moran. His organization is called the Bar X Project, and hopefully we do some good work together, James. First of all, thanks for coming on and doing this. And I just want to, when you first told me the concept of, and I always say this, there is no warmer place on the planet than being in the company of your battle buddies. And I don't care if you went to combat or not, right? The guys who you hung out with, the guys who you slept in the rain with, right? The guys who, when they were sick, you helped them. The guys who, when their girlfriend dumped them, right, you made fun of them but said, come on, let's go. We got to go out, man. You got to go dancing. There's a whole lot of good-looking girls here in Jacksonville, North Carolina that we got to go out and find, or in 29 Palms, right, or some of the other places that we are around the country. They're out there. We can find them. Those guys who did that, right, for you to reconnect, to solidify that connection again, and to be in their company, I just think is awesome. And I can't wait to blow this thing up with you. So thank you very much for doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mac. I appreciate it.
All right. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.